Voices Radio Network.
The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for informational and educational purposes only.
Better, stronger, faster.
Welcome back to Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson. I'm Scott McNally. This program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You could use our code, which is ADVICES, at checkout. That'll give you some additional savings. Plus, it will let them know that you support what we are doing here. Scott, good to talk to you, man. How you been?
Likewise, buddy. Busy. Super duper busy, but good busy.
Right on. There's a bunch of stuff I want.
Oh, go ahead. We did the podcast 2 weeks ago, and then I did four podcasts in 8 days.
You're kidding me. So
that. You did. Well, the two that we had, and then I did Ben Mikulski's, and then Carl Lenore had me back on Superhuman Radio.
Oh, I didn't know that you were back on Superhuman. What did you talk about on Superhuman Radio?
The book. You want to talk about the book again?
Oh, no kidding.
For the first time, yeah. Last time I think I talked about the Meglin Receptor, SHBG, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
This time you just... we talked about the book and bodybuilding and the nature of the beast that is bodybuilding.
That's cool.
A socio-political, psychological perspective, a little bit.
Did he tell you anything about his eye while you were on with him?
He brought it up. I guess that's a running bit of information.
Yeah.
I didn't know he had the patch off, and I couldn't tell that it was going on just because of the clarity. And he actually like looks way off to the side.
Oh yeah.
So like I think that eye was kind of like the one that was furthest from me.
Yeah.
And then he literally started the show talking about his eye. I'm like, oh okay, yeah. So I guess it's getting better. I think he's out of the woods as far as the eye goes.
Yeah. He had said that he had scratched his cornea. He was told not to wear his contacts, but he did anyway to the Arnold when we saw him at the Arnold.
And
he had gotten an infection in his cornea, which basically blinded him. Thankfully, it was temporarily. He said he could see shapes now. And the last 5 days have been good. He also said everybody told him that he was wearing a patch, and he said people thought he should stay wearing the patch because it was like it added a layer of mystery to him.
That's what he said. Yeah, that's a character.
I got to listen to this one. So what day was that? This was last week.
Week ago.
Oh, week ago.
It's on. It's live on Facebook, and it's in the Superhuman Nation.
Okay.
Or Facebook group.
Okay.
Which is what he calls himself now, I think.
Nice. I'll have to check that one out, and I'll definitely look for the audio podcast on iTunes. Speaking of iTunes, VJ and I mentioned it last week on Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. I've been making posts everywhere I can. I've been answering tons of DMs. Frank Vera just commented on our thread here, or on our show here, and he says, hey, Scott, looks like all the episodes, and he's speaking of Advices Radio from 17, 18, and 19, were deleted from the podcast app on iTunes. Is there another way to listen to them, or will they be back on the app? So currently the situation is that the website is down, and that's where all the podcasts are stored at. You know, they're all on the server over at the Advices Radio page, and then through the RSS feed, you guys can view those via iTunes and whatnot, any other apps that you use. So while the website's down, those podcasts aren't going to be available, but they are still there. Worst case scenario, I have them all on backup. So I have them on portable hard drives. But that said, for the moment, while the website is down, which has been about 6 days now, they are not available, unfortunately. So IT is working on it. I'm going to ask for an update today to see where we're at. Hopefully it'll be back up soon. But listen, if they can't get it fixed, I'm just going to take this thing and I'll be the new IT guy. I'll just put it up. If this is not going to be a team effort anymore with the team that backs me up, then I'll have to do it on my own in some fashion. We'll go to SoundCloud. We'll get all the shows up. And until then, all the shows are still recording. All these programs are still going up. The place where you can still see them is over at YouTube. So for the time being, you can check them out at YouTube. All the video casts, exactly what Scott and I are doing right now. We've got a polished, edited version of this where you actually see a clear-cut intro and outro. And that'll be up at YouTube on Thursday. Until then, guys, I'm really sorry that it's not available on the audio format. I know I'm a big fan of audio podcasts personally. I prefer that over video, but, I think that the video is definitely better than nothing. And thank you. Also, one more thing. I want to say thank you to everybody who has been subscribing to the YouTube page, because, the numbers are growing over there and it's pretty cool to see. I think that we're getting some new followers, people who didn't know about Advices Radio before, and they're finding out about guys like Scott Stevenson and the Swoley Trinity and everything else going on. So anyway, that's my soapbox about what's going on there, Scott. I loved the podcast you did with Ben Pekulski, by the way.
Quick question for you on podcasts.
Yeah.
Sometimes I go, I don't know if you know how to do this, but go to the Wayback Machine, mm-hmm. the Internet Archive. And I just looked, like, literally I pulled up the Advices Radio page, and there is some stuff archived there, but not very much. I, like, went to go click on the latest episode there was from April.
Okay.
But when I click on it, it doesn't come up. Basically, it's empty. So maybe that's something worth doing is make it available on just as a backup, which I think would be for free on the Internet Archive on the Wayback Machine.
Okay. I'll check that out. Yeah.
Yeah, because I find all sorts of cool. I've gone back like to Intense Muscle and found stuff.
Yeah,
you know, from way back when. It's very, very cool.
So that anyway, is cool. I've used that before. I had a photo gallery website years ago. You know, when I was in photography, and I've accessed that because that website's long gone now. And
right.
I've gone back to see the different installations I had, you know, of that site. That is cool. I totally forgot about the Wayback Machine.
Yeah, I go there. I go there probably once every 3 or 4 months. There's always something, you know, that's gone.
Yeah.
Like try to recreate someone's web page, something like that. Like you were just saying, but it's actually kind of cool. Like it's like a time machine.
Yeah.
You know, you can go back and see how things once were. Professional Muscle's a fun one to go to too.
Yeah.
You know, scoot back to 2004, something like that.
Pre Operation Raw Deal.
Yeah, all that stuff. So anyway, yes, the Ben Pekulski podcast. That was fun.
Yeah, So my personal experience, I have these headphones. They're noise canceling, and I plugged them into my phone, and I cut my lawn and did all my yard work while I was listening to you and Ben talk. The sound quality was so good because you guys recorded that in the same room, right?
Mm-hmm. It's on video on YouTube.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, man. I gotta look at the YouTube then. And you guys recorded that after you and Ben had trained legs. Now, did you just record and then eat some food did you train and then eat some food and sit down and record, or how did that day pan out?
We didn't even eat. Like, he just wanted to, like, I would have rather recorded than trained and then eaten.
Yeah.
But he just wanted to, he didn't want to sit for a little while and then go train legs because it was a leg day for me, and he kind of trains whatever now. He just kind of like mixes it up.
Yeah.
And so he's like, let's train first. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if I want to know my name after I train legs. But it never came up. You know, literally, that's not the best time for me to be trying to do any higher level processing normally. But I was, you know, I was okay.
You were in rare form, though. You were doing well. You were good.
It is. And I've said this, the RNT Fitness podcast with Akash, what's his last name? Vigala, I think. I did that about 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
And we recorded a long time ago. That would have been in the sitting in the queue for like months. And someone said, "Man, you were on for that podcast. It was like one of your best ever." And I was like, "It's just those guys are asking me really good questions." You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Ben, literally, we were actually talking. I think he does this intentionally, probably with people he has on the podcast that he trains. We chatted in the gym a little bit, and he was coming with ideas at one point, because he doesn't really train his calves anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I was training calves, and he scooted over to the side of the gym and started writing down ideas.
Okay.
So he had all of his thoughts and questions he wanted to ask me written down and pre-formulated.
Okay.
That he picked up on from what we're doing in the gym. And that's
like
why
that.
He had, yeah. So that's really, like, when you ask good questions, insightful questions, and Ben likes to kind of sort of stump people to a certain degree, you know, okay. not stump them, but like dig in on something that maybe is a different angle than someone's normally taken.
Yeah. Make that it a little bit of a challenge, right?
Absolutely. Like that's much more fun for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of like to rise to the speculative challenge.
Yeah, it is. It was cool. It was cool. And how was the workout overall? He said he's been on no carbs. He's doing a cyclical keto diet. So he was on very low carbs, and this is like his, now you said in the podcast that was it on average people, it is said to carb up after two workouts of a body part, like you shouldn't do more than two workouts of one body part before you get some carbs in you, something like that, was it?
It's funny because I'm hearing you say that, and I just listened to you and DJ talk about that. I don't even know that you listened to the podcast. You heard him telling you what was on the podcast? Or
no, I was the one. I heard that part.
You heard
yeah.
that part. Okay.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember what he – because he was remembering what I had said.
We both had listened to it. I forgot. Now, I couldn't remember if I had listened to the end. And then once he started saying, he was saying Ben was on keto, then I remembered. I was like, oh, yeah, because I listened to that whole part and how Ben was saying that, you know, he had been doing a cyclical keto diet and he had been training for about, I think it was like 3-4 weeks straight without any kind of a carb up.
That's the rule of thumb that I have used regularly with people, is you'll run out of glycogen. It depends on the, we cover this extensively in the podcast, but it depends on the volume of training that you're doing, depends on how much. If you're really on a ketogenic diet, then you've got really zero carbs coming in. But there can be some glycogen synthesis. There's an adaptation that will happen over the long haul with people that have been on low-carb diets, where they can gradually, you know, have some creeping up of glycogen. They won't be as full as if they're, you know, taking in 1,000 grams a day.
Okay.
But that's a rule of thumb. Because you just see what he saw. Like, literally, he'd be going, and Ben trains hard. He's like, he's no stranger to hard training, you know. And you could just see is like all of a sudden, like those grinder reps would just be whoop, like the muscle was just giving out, just done.
Yeah.
And you probably experienced that before.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like where you just like, there's no pump. There's no burn because you're not producing metabolites of lactic acid and everything else that would give you that sensation of a burn and a pump. It's just not there because you don't have the energy turnover. You don't have metabolite accumulation. You don't have the metabolic stress because you don't have the glycogen.
Yeah.
So you just like go and go and go, and all of a sudden it's like someone cut the switch, like someone just cut the wire. It's like, what the hell? So he had a little bit, I could just see it in the way, in his fatigue profile.
Okay.
He would just go, 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 go. Instead of like, you know, grind, he would just go and go, go, and just drop off.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
I've been paying attention, and now I just listened to that maybe the middle, I think Wednesday of last week I listened, and I've been paying attention in my workout since. What my fatigue looks like in the gym, where you had said, you know, you start out strong and then over time those reps begin to slow down. Traditionally, that's if you have a decent amount of glycogen in your body, and then you get to a point where they get so slow that you're grinding and then they fail, versus you're saying Ben just like he would go, 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 and then just there was just nothing.
That's what I saw,
and okay.
in a way that I wouldn't have expected, because Ben knows how to train hard. He wasn't giving up psychologically or neurologically. It was a muscular failure.
Okay.
Locus, I would say. But the thing is, like that fatigue profile, and you can see this when you subject skeletal muscle to electrical stimulation or e-stim. I had someone on my I'm not sure where he's from. He's a foreigner. He doesn't speak English. Is not his native tongue, so I understand what that's like. But he posted, he's like, Ben's podcast. He's like, esteem. Like, what is all this esteem? He was spelling it like as in self-esteem.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, esteem. It's like, what is this? What are you talking about? And I guess I did not fully said electrical stimulation. He had no idea what esteem was.
Okay.
And he's like, what is esteem? What is that? And he couldn't figure it out from context. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Poor guy. Like, we went for like 10 minutes talking about electrical stimulation, and he didn't have any idea what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
It's been just totally frustrating for him. So the muscle fiber type, the fuel that it has, those will all make a difference in terms of the fatigue profile.
Hmm.
Okay. So if you're running out of glycogen, you'll have this kind of bonking phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got more type 1 fibers, there'll be a more gradual fatigue.
Okay.
Then if you have more fast twitch fibers, they fatigue. They're fast fatigable. They're fatigue more readily.
Okay.
That's, yeah. There's different ways. This is, we can get a whole fiber typing phenomenology, which is just a gigantic ball of wax. I have a YouTube video where I cover that. But people equate like fast fibers with type 2 and slow with type 1.
Yeah.
Well, type refers to the myosin heavy chain. Fast and slow refers to contractile properties.
Okay.
Those things are associated, and myosin is a major, myosin heavy chain is the major determinant of twitch speed, which is where fast or slow comes from. But they're not the same.
Okay.
It's almost, it's not, this isn't a perfect analogy, but it's kind of like saying, you know, all 4x4s are trucks.
Hmm.
And it's not necessarily true. You can have, for instance, type 1 fibers tend to be oxidative.
Okay.
They tend to be slow. So you can talk about slow oxidative fibers and fast glycolytic fibers, SO and FG. Oxidative refers to mitochondrial content. Glycolytic refers to glycolytic enzyme content.
I'm hanging in there as best as I can.
These are all just different properties of skeletal muscles that can be tested in order to delineate them.
Okay.
So you can say you have big people, you can have tall people, and here's probably a better analogy. Tall people and short people.
Okay.
And then you can have heavy people and light people.
Hmm.
Not all short people are light, and not all heavy people are tall.
Yeah.
You can have someone who's like real thin, is really tall, and they can be outweighed by a person with a higher BMI who's very short.
Okay.
And that happens in fibers. You can actually have higher oxidative enzymes in what would be categorized as type 2 fibers.
Hmm.
You'll see that like endurance athletes who train those type 2 fibers. So they have type 2 myosin, which normally you would think of as being associated with higher glycolytic enzyme activity and lower oxidative mitochondrial content, but they can actually be higher than the type 1s. So people just equate all those, and like no one ever measures twitch speed in humans. Like it never, like people don't do that shit hardly at all. People talk about fast and slow twitch.
Yeah, that's about what I know.
Yeah, people just call fast and slow. It's just like that's sort of like a layman's term. So, and even I've even heard people who are PhDs who will use that just because it's just the kind of the lay nomenclature. But it misses out on all the really pretty fucking phenomenally, at least to me, interesting aspects of muscle physiology.
Hmm.
The thing I was going to say, like to get away from some of the didactic stuff, is that one thing you can do is say, so if someone is bonking in the gym, let's say they're low on carbs, this is something you have to use with some reservation, sparingly. But so let's say if you were fully carved up, you would be getting 12 or 15, let's say you're getting 15 reps with a given weight.
Okay.
And because you're low on glycogen, you only get 12. So you bonk. You can eke out the loading, get those extra 3 reps by taking a pause in between.
Sure, absolutely.
So literally, yeah. So you can do that, but the thing is, then you end up potentially wrecking your nervous system.
Mm.
So you can do a little bit higher volume, which would make sense. So you know, do a rest pause, do a cluster set. So let's say you want to do. This is probably a better way. 15 reps. You might do a set of 10, and take a breather, and then do a set of 5.
Sure.
Like a 2-stage DC training style rest pause set. And that's actually one of the things we did. I don't know if we're gonna, what the video is going to come out. We filmed in the gym. We did a thing. That Ben likes to do. So we did a couple muscle rounds.
Okay.
Because he has some really nice knee extension, really nice hamstring curl in there, and I wanted to use those. And unfortunately, I had a hamstring. My hamstring was tweaked. Mm. I think it's my IT band.
Okay.
It started bothering me, and it was just, I could tell I had to cut the muscle round short
because
it was going to go. I was like,
no
was
kidding. Like,
nope. Yeah, it had popped. There was a snap that didn't injure anything. I thought I had torn my the biceps femoris tendon, but I think it was just the IT band popping across the tibial plateau.
Okay.
And it messed me up for weeks.
Oh,
and it was getting there. I'm like, so I had to stop. But
how's it doing now, by the way?
It's gonna be fine. I just gotta stretch my IT band.
All right.
I know how to fix it now. I figured it out months ago, but it was just kind of coming back at me. But I can still do leg presses and squats and compound stuff.
Yeah.
It's just the hamstring curls tend to be an issue. So anyway, so we did a couple muscle rounds. Then we went to what a thing that Ben likes to do, and I think it was sets of five.
Hmm.
It's kind of, it was a cluster set, cluster drop set, which I really liked. And I liked it because it was based on, you're going to like this, it doesn't fit with kind of the idea of accruing as much volume as possible with limiting the nervous system taxation like I do in fortitude training. Basically, it's geared at trying to make things as hard as possible.
Okay.
On yourself, so you pick a weight you can get, like maybe it was 8, I can't remember. You'll have to see the video, because I went heavier I think than I was thinking I was going to, but I just went ahead and did it. So I think it was maybe, I think they were set to 6, let's say they were 6 or 5.
Okay.
And so pick a weight you can get 6 with. So I think I did like a double, and I'm like, alright, I'm going to take a long fucking time before I can get 4 more of these, but I'm going to do it.
Okay.
This is on a hack squat. And he had set it up. He loves to do this. This was a very unusual one for me. Actually, we had the toes, heels were raised. He put a wedge in there, so it was very quad dominant. I couldn't engage my glutes.
No kidding.
My hamstring, my posterior chain, really at all, like nothing. Of course, you're on a hack squat, so you can't like drive your ass back with the posterior chain involved. So it was like a very, very quad dominant hack squat.
Yeah, I've never done that. I've never wedged my heels up on a hack squat before. That's interesting.
He's got like, there's like a dozen metal wedges in that gym.
That's badass. I don't know
why there's so many of them.
Yeah.
Like literally like more than you could put in all the racks and all the machines where they could be used. Huh. They're everywhere.
Huh.
It's like they had a double order or something. Like someone, oh shit, you know, they didn't come and they ordered them again.
Yeah.
They are all over the place. Like maybe it's like, maybe he has the full set from like 2 degrees to like 20 degrees and he's got everything in between. But so you do something you can get 5 reps with. And literally, I was like, I think I did like a double or triple, bunch of breaths. I did a single, bunch of breaths.
What's a bunch of rest? Like how long would
breath,
you guess?
Breaths.
So
breath.
All right. So how long do you figure you stop, just out of curiosity?
10 seconds.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't have gotten the rep if I hadn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
I picked like a 2 rep max, and I got like 5 or 6 reps with it.
Yeah.
That's why it was so much fun, because it was fucking brutal, because I had to rest that long.
Yeah.
And then he pulled a plate off, and it was like 5 or 6 plates on this hack squat, I can't remember which. And then you're supposed to, and then you wait until you waited long enough until you think you can get 5 or 6 reps more. I can't remember if we're doing 5 or 6.
Oh, yeah.
So you just like, you don't wait like really long. You want to wait until like you think you want to make it as brutal on yourself as possible.
Yeah.
So I didn't wait very long. And I got another double, and like the next one took me like, it felt like it took me like an hour. It was probably like a minute to do like 6 reps, you know?
Jeez.
And then you pull another one off, and then I did the same thing again. So it was a fun set. And it was, you know, of course, and Ben was motivating me, and Trevor, who's the videographer, he was laughing. He was laughing because I was making it so hard. And I guess maybe this, I don't know, I'll have to ask Ben. I didn't ask him, but this is maybe something they do a lot. And people probably rest like a minute.
Mm.
And I rested like 20 seconds. I'm getting back the fuck in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was fun. So that was like, it was like literally probably a dozen reps that if I tried to do a double, I would have failed.
Jeez.
So they were like a dozen like max effort reps essentially over the course of that thing. So that was a fun set. So that was cool. I like those.
How did you feel the next day, like soreness wise? Because you mentioned in the podcast too that you tend to get more sore versus some guys don't.
I was fine. I've been doing like 5 and 6 stage drop sets.
Okay.
And all sorts of crazy shit. So but not very much. That was all we did. We did two muscle rounds. Actually, I was feeling kind of shitty that day. I had I was cleaning up around my house. The guys are done now, and I got exposed to something. There was a big box full of drywall and stuff. It was actually a recycling bin. I went to dump it into the trash. And the recycling bin, I don't know why they put it in there. They just did, because it was a recycling bin. It had like probably 70 pounds of that shit in there.
Oh, God.
Broke the recycling bin, fell on the ground, and gave me a blasted with a big puff of smoke.
Oh, jeez.
I think it was a mold-infested stuff. Anyway.
Yeah.
But now I was fine. I was, you know, I was as sore as I normally am, but, you know, we didn't do, that was it. I think then I trained calves and abs and biceps.
Okay.
Oh, that wasn't very much.
Okay. That's cool. Now, I know, you know, Ben Pakulski, I know he's downsized a lot. That's been a big thing he's talked about, you know, since he had...
270 still.
So he's not, that's what I was going to say. He had downsized, but that does not sound downsized at all to me then.
He just can't get his weight down.
Wow.
We talked about it, yeah. Wow. That's why he hasn't had no carbs for like 3 or 4 weeks, and he's still 270.
Oh, my God. And how do his legs look? Because they were always such a strong point on him. You said he's not even training calves.
He had them totally covered up because calves are, you know, giant.
Yeah.
And you could tell his thighs are probably twice the circumference of mine.
Oh, my God, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just nuts.
They're just like, you can just see when you see someone whose legs are that big,
yeah.
You know, they just don't look real. Like it belongs on an animal other than a human.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like that's like that belongs on some kind of a bull or some shit, you know.
That's so crazy, so man.
He's big. Yeah, he's 270, and he's, I think, we're about the same height.
Okay,
maybe he's an inch or two taller or something.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy. So
he's just big. You know, his legs are just naturally big. I mean, he's not, you know, it's funny because I think I used more weight than him on the knee extension. The hamstring curl, I don't remember the same weight. And then he had an extra plate on that hack squat.
So okay.
I used 6 and he used 7 maybe, or 5 and 6, one of the two.
And that's probably something too he was very used to doing versus that you've never, like you said, you had never done that like that before.
Yeah, he that was his comfort spot. Like,
yeah.
If you watch, he squats like feet close together and he's pretty upright. That's his natural squatting position, I think.
Okay.
And like when he, like that's sort of a natural, from what I've seen, I haven't watched him lift a lot, but I could just tell that was a very natural groove for him.
Okay.
And I was like, you know how you're like, you're trying to figure out your groove. And I was like, I was like on all the warm up sets, I'm adjusting my feet and adjusting the angle of my hips, like trying to find, I never really found a sweet spot. So it was always awkward, but, but his legs are just ridiculous. And he's, you know, crystal, perfect form, you know, very, very smooth, controlled form. So
that's pretty badass. Hey, off topic from that, I wanted to tell you about this. So this had to be 2 episodes ago. I was telling you how I was coming down with a case of golf elbow, and you told me, you know, you were saying, well, what exercises are doing? And I said, really, everything is hurting it at this point. And you said, well, you have to take time off. I did end up taking a week off. I've been working on stuff. You know, I went to some FST therapy. I've been icing. I was icing post-workout. I took about 7 days off of training upper body. I still trained legs twice that week.
Honey Rambod treated you? Is what you're telling me? FST?
What's
FST for the listeners?
Fascio stretch technique. And okay. That's Becky Wilson over here at Tricovery. She's a great, great therapist. And actually, Victoria and I went together. So she worked on Victoria's neck and she worked on my elbow. But she also said, like, this is a case of inflammation and it's not something that she can really do a lot of direct work with. The key is getting the inflammation down and rest is going to be the key, just like you said. So I did take a lot of rest. I've been working on some therapy exercises for it. And this is what I wanted to show you. I picked up a TENS unit, which I am using right now. I've got this thing hooked up to the underside of my elbow here. You can see I've actually got it turned up probably a little louder or a little stronger than I should, but it'll actually make my hand, hold on, flex a little bit every time it goes on if I have it turned up really good. But I only paid $35 for it, and it's working really well, man. So it's
What's it doing for you?
It's I'm finding that it seems to it's giving me pain relief, really. I don't even know, you know, how to break that down, but I'm putting it in the area. It's almost like in that joint, there's like a spot I can't rub. There's a spot I can't massage, and it's getting in there for me. And I think that it's kind of helping to bring blood flow in. My guess is that it's bringing blood flow in and helping to carry away waste materials when I use it. But I've just been using it a couple times a day for 20 minutes a time, 30 minutes a time, and I've noticed a difference. It seems to be helping. What are your thoughts overall on TENS units?
First, it's interesting that you're and it sounds like she's really good because she's the one who helped you with your shoulder.
She is, yeah.
Peck, yeah, and she really helped you out there.
Yeah.
It's funny because I have treated golfer's elbow and tennis elbow. It's pretty common with Tuina, with body work, Tuina body work, Chinese body work, directly, effectively, efficaciously.
Okay.
Multitude of times. You can treat it in just a few treatments.
Really?
Yeah, like directly. So she didn't want to do that, but it can be done. I know it. Because I've done it before.
Okay.
Tennis elbow too. It's been kind of crazy. I've had friends with tennis elbow, and treated it once, and it went away.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, people just don't know. So I passed it along, not to like as a Rudy Toot thing, but just so people know that I'm a good body worker, and I was just kind of beginner really, but you can treat golfers and tennis elbow pretty effectively.
Well, let me ask you then, because this is something I'm not familiar with. Mm-hmm. Who would I go to for, like, how would I find somebody to treat me with this type of modality?
Find an acupuncturist.
Okay.
Who does body work.
Okay.
Who's AOBTA, Asian Oriental Body Therapy Association, AOBTA, accredited, ideally. Or just someone who does Tuina. Or if you could just, like, find someone who is Chinese or who learned it in a lineage.
Okay.
Those will be really good people. The best are a lot of times people who do kung fu, or Xing Yi and Bagua, like some of the internal martial arts.
Okay.
So go to a dojo type of place and find someone who wants to call it a dojo, but find someone who does. And those are the guys who know this shit, because they beat each other up and then they fix each other so they can beat each other up again.
No kidding.
That's okay. Who I learned the Tuina from,
okay.
or martial artists. That's the origin of it.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, so, and there's liniments that you would use in this instance to help things go away.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my approach would be probably a lot different than what you're doing, but not that there's not different ways to skin the cat, but like, so that's who you want to find. You can just go to acufinder.com,
okay.
And you can find lots of people there. It's an easy one.
All right. Yeah. I'll definitely check that out then.
Yeah.
I'll definitely check that out and see what I can do. Yeah.
But, so TENS is transcutaneous electroneurostimulation. And the basic premise of it is basically just to fatigue, the neuroconduction pathways that transmit pain from that area up to your brain.
Hmm.
So you basically just keep stimulating until you don't feel any pain because the nerves are gone. And those things you said that can happen, obviously the contraction and, you know, you can reduce inflammation, that kind of stuff. But the idea of what the TENS does per se, like its main mechanism of action is just, it's just pain relief.
So it's not going to actually fix this for me is what you're telling me, or
fix is relative.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So fix is relative. So
I don't want to just relieve pain, you know, and mask further problems. That's, you know what I mean? I want to fix this so that it's gone.
Restoration of normal movement pattern is a lot of times important to remedy this sort of situation. So if you're in pain and you're not moving normally, you're not using things normally to some degree, that can perpetuate the pain.
I see.
So like here's a story. So there's a guy, he was the master. He was the guy who taught the guys who taught me Tuina.
Yeah.
And I don't know, he was sort of a kind of legendary. You know, when I start off in school, everyone would talk about him. It was Vince Black. He was trained in China. He was just like this, like, undefeatable martial artist. You know, he could just, like, go like that with his fingers and, you know, you'd be on your back unconscious. You're like, how the hell did he just do that? He just knocked me out, like, the flip of his pinky. And he was an incredible bone setter too. So bone setting is the term in Chinese medicine for what you would call kind of a chiropractic manipulation, but you can't call it that.
Okay.
In Chinese medicine, because that's under the scope of practice of chiropractors and DOs. Yeah. I guess MDs can some states, but bone setting predates chiropractic by thousands of years. They've been doing that, popping bones, setting necks, setting shoulders and joints for thousands of years in China. It's sort of advanced part of the Tuina oriental body work that I know. So he's like just amazing with that stuff. He could just go and like set everything in your body in a matter of just a couple minutes. So I go in, I had never met him before. I didn't know him. And I went in, I was having some problems with my knee. So I went into his clinic, which was off campus. And actually one of my fellow students who was interning there and working at the counter was there, and she checked me in, and we're kind of chatting, and I'm like looking around like at all the cool stuff on the wall, the diplomas and the certificates and all the pictures of him in China and,
yeah,
you know, all the letters, all the cool shit, you know. And but my knee was really it was bothering me pretty badly. I had chondromalacia patella, so patellofemoral syndrome, pain under my kneecap.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was really, and it was popping. I think I had a little piece of cartilage that was slipping around in there, to be honest. So anyway, a plica, it's called. Sometimes you can get a little piece of cartilage that's sort of like folded up on itself. So I would feel this pop whenever I try to do a leg press or a squat, and it would hurt like shit. So I was dealing with that for like months and months and months. Well, I'm in the waiting room. I'm waiting. And this guy comes in and sits down and starts reading the newspaper. You know, I'm another patient. I kind of chit-chat with him. And he's like, oh, you know, he's just, you know, making small talk. And then he gets up and he leaves. And then they bring me back. And they usually do some craniosacral to get me relaxed, get you relaxed for the body work, whatever the Vince was going to do, and the acupuncture and everything else, just to sort of get you sort of into a baseline mode. And this guy that I met in the waiting room walks in.
You're kidding.
That's Vince.
You're kidding.
He was scoping me out.
Huh.
He wanted to see how I was moving when I wasn't knowing that I was being observed.
Wow.
So rather than like say, okay, stand up, sit down for me, where people do things differently because they know they've got the physician,
yeah,
the acupuncture physician watching them, he wanted to see how I moved around. And so he was watching me get up and move around and do things.
Huh.
And so one of the things he said to me was, stop moving like you're so injured.
Hmm.
Stop accommodating so much.
Oh, I see.
Because I was trying to stay off of it because it bothered me. And I was sort of at a loss. It's been going on for quite a while.
You're babying it, basically. You're trying to take care and protect it.
No, I mean, I hadn't babied. I had done the opposite. I just tried train through it for months and months and months.
No,
and
but I mean I was, now, because he said stop treating it like it's injured.
At that time.
Okay,
I don't know what I was doing at that time.
But okay.
I was moving in an abnormal way.
Okay.
And he was, I think, his advice was, you know, try to stand up normally, just slow yourself down, you know, and, you know, use a normal movement pattern so you can start ingraining that. And that's something that that I actually employ a lot of times with people when they're shoulder injuries. And this isn't medical advice for anybody, so
sure.
I can't really say that. Is that like this is actually it's related to a Dante Trudell thing that he put out years ago, the broomstick stretch.
Mm.
It's a circumduction stretch for the shoulder that works phenomenally well for lots of shoulder injuries. Where you take a broomstick and you bring it, I can't show because like my chair here, bring it over back behind you and the up front and back and forth.
Right.
And so it's circumduction. Circumduction is this movement, twirling around in the shoulder joint.
Okay.
And if you can do that with a big wide range of motion without any pain, you're going to have a healthy shoulder. And when I show people that, and I've shown them been showing people that for years and years and years now, and it's fixed a lot of shoulders and mine as well. I will suggest people do that at the where there's no pain, but go as slow as you need to go to avoid any sort of painful movement.
Mm.
So Vince was kind of telling me the same thing, if I'm recalling correctly, was like, try to get up normally. Don't like use the other leg and baby, you know, the bad knee or, you know, accommodate it in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
Get up normally, take your time.
Wow.
So that it doesn't hurt. And there's a retraining of the nervous system that can happen there.
Huh. Interesting.
So there's a connection there. I mean, I don't know in your case, you know, I'd have to see you if I were treating you as an acupuncturist, but where the TENS unit can help people to do that. They don't have pain anymore, so they start going about like, now you wouldn't like want to put the TENS unit on and like go in the gym and go hog wild on exercises that cause the pain in the first place. That
right.
would be, it's not very smart, obviously, but you can go back to normal day-to-day living in a way, and this sort of creates a kind of a bridge to go from, oh shit, I can't use my arm for anything, to I can start, you know, using your left hand, unless the image is reversed.
Nope,
your left
hand. You're correct, yeah.
Yeah, which I had looked for a letter there. I see on your microphone. So, so you're not. I don't think you're a lefty, but you do use your left hand every once in a while
for typing. I feel it. You know, that's
yeah.
you know, typing. Anything else? Training. Yeah.
So this gets you towards, you know, some normalcy of movement. Delivery.
Mail?
I don't know, Amazon. I have a don't knock on the door, but they still have to knock, I think.
Yeah.
Hold on. Hey, Suki! You let them know, didn't you?
Now I can actually see the tails wagging. Versus audio, I just hear the dogs.
That's Big Blitzy's tail, I think, in the back, the big one, yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, that's kind of the idea, but, you know, a TENS unit, it can be just a masking thing, to be honest. Mm.
Well, I don't want it to be that, you know, that's for sure.
So I mean, hold on just a sec.
Yeah.
Suki, come here. Come on. Come here, Suki.
Aw.
It's Foxy. There's a little fox. Suki.
Here comes Suki.
She'll just keep barking unless I call her off. Good girl. Come here, Suki. 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 You little biscuit. Yes, you're just a little brown biscuit, aren't you? Okay, you let them know. She'll just bark and bark and bark. Like I have to like get her to go away from the door. She'll keep it up. What was I going
to
say?
You're saying it could be just a masking unit, a masking method just to cover up the pain.
Oh, so yeah. So what you have medial epicondylitis is what golfer's elbow is.
Okay.
So the forearm flexors here connect mainly to the medial epicondyle, which is part of the humerus. So that's your pain right there, right?
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, tennis elbow is lateral epicondylitis. Golfer's elbow is golfers. Golfers are swinging the golf club like this, and tennis are doing backstroke like that, or backhand tennis stroke like that. So are you stretching your forearm?
I am. Yeah, that's the majority of the physical therapy that I found has been stretching techniques. And so what I've been doing is applying those things when I go to the gym. So I'll still go and I'll do cardio. And I've been, you know what the other thing is, Scott? I think that with training, I was just telling this to a guy that I work with. He hurt his back and it's the first, he's a younger guy. It's the first time he's really hurt himself. And I can tell you from personal experience, once I hurt my back, what did I do? I took a little time off, but then I got in there to quote unquote, see what I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would push it and hurt myself again, and I'd continue to do that. So I know that, you know, with stopping, I still wanted to be able to find a challenge. And so I've found that I've challenged myself with higher intensity cardio because I can get like some mental satisfaction out of doing that, get my heart rate up. And then I go to do these stretches afterward and the physical therapy stuff. And I have found it to be pretty helpful. Most of the stretches have been it's things that I found off of YouTube that have been therapy treatments for golf elbow. I've had tennis elbow before, which was slightly different, you know, in a different fix. I'd actually been to physical therapy for that a couple times, but that's been years and years now. These, like I said, though, they're mostly stretches that I'm working on that bring all of this out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's super important.
Yeah.
I could show you. Like, are you doing one where you're supinated like this?
I can't see your hand right now. Yes.
Yeah, that's an important one. Yeah. You can find where it's tight.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked about, you know, stretching is sort of an intuitive thing, like find the tight spot and then stretch there.
Yeah.
Within reason. But yeah, you can figure out where it's tight, loosen it up. But I mean, golfers and tennis elbow, it's a crazy thing because it will go on for months and years.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fixable in days in a lot of cases. So anyway, I hope you get it.
It's doing a lot better. It's doing a lot better. Yeah. I just don't want to. And I'm going to go train today. So I'm going to test it out now lightly and see how that works out. Cause it's been over a week now since I've trained anything upper body. And so I've got a plan in action. I'm not going to do anything that requires a lot of gripping and you know, I'm going to continue to do the therapy stuff as well. So,
I mean, I guess I'll throw this out here. Like, you can train almost everything upper body without gripping.
That's where I'm going with this. So I'm getting rid of some of and mostly the stuff I'm using is going to be machine based, just so that I can get started without having to stabilize anything in any way, without having to say grab a dumbbell and hold on to it and control it from twisting, stuff like that.
I mean, I'm talking about without having to use your hands at all. Like, you can use like Isolator Fitness.
Oh yeah,
they make the isolator bags, and I've got some videos. We talked about this before on the podcast, where you can use ab slings or ab hang ups
that you put on your upper arm. Yes, and you can do like a pull down with those.
Mm-hmm.
Those are pretty great.
do pec flies with those on a cross cable machine.
Yeah.
So, you can do bent over rows on a Smith machine with those. You can do side laterals. You can do overhead presses on cables. Those, like, go to, if you go to Isolator Fitness, you can actually buy those. It's a really good option for someone who, like someone who's actually like got their wrist in a cast or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Like you could, like, people like, oh, I can't train for 2 months. It's like, actually you could do almost everything, you know, pretty safely, you know, as long as you don't have like, as long as you're truly, you know, casted.
Yeah.
And you're not just like, you know, you don't have bones that are, you know, not mended and they're floating around, but
yeah,
you can train like really effectively with that. And they don't market it that as a, it's not a rehab device,
okay,
but it's a fucking, they're badass. They really are pretty cool. And it's a novel stimulus.
Yeah, yeah, it so is, isn't
I
it?
I use those. Oh, totally. Totally, man.
You have them so, yourself?
No, they're so expensive. I just, every time I want to go buy them, I'm like, ah.
Yeah.
They're like, it's like $220, I think, for the full set or something like that. And
yeah, that's
I
not
probably
cheap.
Should. Yeah, and it does, I think it takes a little while, like, to set up.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, with the ab slings, well, once you put them on, you put the cuff on, and then you have carabiners, then you're good to go.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you just leave them on, but
you just walk around the gym looking like DLB circa 2007.
Yeah.
Remember she was the model for them?
And Seth Ferrosi. Yeah,
yes, that was Seth Ferrosi. That's right. Yeah, young Seth Ferrosi. Huh.
Yeah, yeah. So now they have another model. I don't know who she is. There's a one. Hello, little fox.
Yeah, they would have to pay Seth Ferrosi. Oh, my gosh.
Hello, foxy.
I got to pan the screen over here so people can see her.
My goodness. It's a little fox.
I had to pan the screen so people could see her.
What?
What are you doing? You coming back up here? Come on. What are you doing? She looks like a fox, doesn't she?
She does, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, let's take a quick break.
Yep.
And okay, cool. We'll be back in just a minute, guys. We've got a bunch of questions from Scott's message board this week. And yep. We'll see you guys in just a second. Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
Cool.
Scott, can I take a moment to plug the book? I see one behind you.
Of course.
I see one behind you over there.
Yeah, there is. There is behind me. There's a bunch. I have them everywhere.
Yeah?
I use them as doorstops, yeah.
I'm looking through the book right now. I'm going to just mention, first of all, I'm going to, right in the front here, you have basically, this is your intake form, isn't it? What page was that on? It's right near the front of the book. I just missed it. But it basically is the intake form that you use, am I correct, to talk to a new client, to kind of find out what you want to know about them.
Kind of, yeah. It's based on that. It's the personal bodybuilding inventory.
Personal bodybuilding inventory.
Yeah, okay. It's available on my website.
Okay. And
for free.
Okay.
As a downloadable PDF form that you can use and print out and then clear. I mean, I made it a field-based form.
Oh,
that
no
you type
kidding.
Right into.
No kidding.
On your computer, yeah.
Okay.
Or your phone if you want, I guess.
Well, what I was going to mention was that it's in the book, too. And I know that this is something I think is important, that I've had people that reach out to me and I send them my questionnaire and then they say, huh, you know, you're asking questions I hadn't even thought of before. And I think that a lot of times with coaching, being able to, a lot of it is logical stuff, but maybe sometimes we don't know the questions to ask. And so just the quick, simple point I was going to make is that with Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach, I think it's a way that right there in itself is one step where you can start looking at some of the questions that you need to ask yourself. And I know that's a very simple way of making a statement about the book, but I did want to say one positive thing about it while because I wanted to make this into kind of like a mini commercial. So
Yeah, cool. I like it.
Yeah. Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach, guys. You can check it out at Amazon.com. You can pick up the hardcover. If you're international, you can get it at Barnes & Noble, or you can go to BYOBBCoach.com, and you can get the ebook there. Scott, is there another place that you can pick it up?
Barnes & Noble, Amazon, my site. And then there's all the pirated versions that people are selling all over the place that I suggest you not get.
Yeah, don't get
unless
those.
Unless you're dastardly. Yeah, don't get those.
Yeah.
I'm looking here. I want to see if we can put this up.
Oh, cool.
But because I mean, part of the book is not to make money. People are like, oh, my God, you're charging $100 for the book. I'll have a someone made a comment on that.
Yeah.
Let me send you this picture. We can put this up. So if you go to my site. Actually, add that in there. I'll send you a picture we can put up on the screen. You will find, you don't have to buy the book for this. You don't have to. You can if you want. I would love for you to. But if you just want to use the form, I'll send this to you, Scott. There we go.
All right.
This is kind of a screen capture. Just came through on your phone.
There it is.
Yeah. You can download the form. Like, I spent hours and hours I have Adobe Acrobat, so I put together an actual PDF form.
Okay.
That you just type in your stuff, and you can leave it filled out, and you go back and change the goals, or you could just start from scratch. And because there's a clear button to clear all the forms. Hmm. It's like a professional form that anyone can use.
Hmm.
And I know people, you probably are probably hundreds of coaches, you know, using it as their own, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I even had one person ask me, said, hey, can you send that to me, but without your logos on there? I'm like,
I just use whiteout. I use whiteout on your logo, and then I scratch my name in.
Well, they wanted me to, like, make an electronic version of the form for them.
People are nuts, man.
I know. I'm like, oh, okay, so, all right.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on, like, you can't just give me, like, a little bit of some kudos for having put together the form?
Right.
Anyway. So, yeah, but that's there for people to use, you know. That's just a freebie. And it's mainly there for, of course, people who want to follow the ideas in the book, you know, who really want to, you know, be their own coach and check in repeatedly, you know, at the beginning of going from post-contest to off-season, off-season to pre-contest or whatever it may be. It's like, okay, where the hell am I?
Yeah.
When you get confused, here's the thing. Like, I mean, you know, I know you've seen this too. You have clients who, like, they're just almost behaving randomly. They're like buying random shit, and they're buying supplements, or they're asking you, like, they'll say, "What do you know about this?" Like, kind of random questions, right? Yeah. And not that the questions are random because they're things that are curious, but it's like they seem like they're just kind of coming out of nowhere. There's off topic, tangential types of things, and a lot of times that's because they don't really know, they haven't redirected themselves.
Mm.
They forget what their goals are. They forget what they're trying to accomplish, where they're going. And that's why this form can be very, very helpful. Hmm. I've got room there for 5 goals.
Okay.
And it's really important, but I say, and you can see this on the picture if it's still up on the screen, but specific and quantifiable. What, how, where, why, and what for. So, like, literally, so let's take a goal. I want to win a show.
Yeah. Okay.
What show?
Hmm.
And how are you going to win the show? So, like, you got to pick the show. How? Are you going to be bigger than before? Are you going to be better conditioned than before?
Yeah.
Are you going to be posing better than before? Of course, where is the show and when is the show? So you got to have a date. That sets up your timeline.
Yeah.
It sets up, okay, so can I be ready in 8 weeks to meet those hows?
Hmm.
Or do I need 18 weeks? And the whys and the what for are huge. This is where people will get, you know, why does it matter if you win that show?
Hmm.
A lifelong dream of mine. You know, I just made some horrible mistakes that I want to undo. Last time I did that show, I want to redeem myself. You know, the what for and the why are kind of the same, but there's sort of different way of asking the same question that might resonate differently with people.
Hmm.
But, you know, so why does winning a show even matter to you? Why does it matter if you win or you place last? You know, because winning is a standard of achievement. Like, literally, that's just that. Like someone said, okay, what? So when someone asked, like, tell me about, like, should I take HMB? And like, okay, where does that fit with your goals? Yeah. What do we want to do? And it's like, so you go back to those goals. Like, I need to eat in order to reach this goal of that show in X number of weeks. I need to follow my diet much better than last time. Mm. My diet sucked. I kept on cheating, you know, blah, blah, blah. HMB does not fit in the plan for my goals because that's just a, so you can quickly go back to that form and fill it out, and it will clarify. It'll, like, all those things that are just kind of this random, like, kind of a dust cloud of ideas and confusing notions can be clarified by going back to that inventory and looking at it and filling it out again. Hmm. and starting over if you need to. Like, you can do that every month and just look at it and make sure you're just checking in with yourself. That's what a good coach does. A good coach, like, someone sends you those questions. Like, so why are you asking about HMB? Yeah. Where'd you hear about this? Okay, what's going on with you? It's like, I feel fat. It's like, why do you feel fat? It's like, well, you go into a new gym. There's a bunch of badasses at the gym. You want an advantage. It's not you. You haven't changed. It's just you're just comparing yourself differently to people.
Yeah.
A good coach might go through that with someone if that were their situation. Hmm. That's what this form can do for someone in being your own coach, is give you sort of a room for reverberating your own ideas and your own goals and your own notions of why you're doing this, what for, how, when, blah, blah, blah. In a way that a good coach can do. You can do it with yourself. Hmm. You can come to know yourself better using that form. So that's why I thought that was really important to come up with not just got to buy the book and make photocopies, you know, blah, blah. People aren't going to do that. Download the thing and you can have it. Literally, you can go to the website and you can have it in the next 5 seconds if you want.
I love that too. I think that it's important. It's just something that, and that's one of the things that's so simple, is being able to determine, like, what your goals are. Mm-hmm. I think writing them down is a huge thing, and it's something I haven't always done, but I'm trying to get in the habit of that nowadays. I had been using a whiteboard. I kind of got away from it, but I'll set up even just like weekly goals, things that I want to achieve. And then once it's written down, you know, Victoria does that a lot. She has lists, tons of lists. We have lists on the refrigerator. She has her personal to-do list in the morning. Everything that she's doing, it's by a list, and that she can set it up so that she can then systematically go through and check these things off, stay accountable. And I like where you're going with it. So anyway, I just wanted to make a quick mention of the book and also of our sponsor that we mentioned at the beginning, True Nutrition. You guys can go to truenutrition.com, use our code ADVICES for some additional savings. They got a lot of great products over there. I'm using there. Actually, I'm drinking, this is the Team Skip that I'm drinking right now, Scott. It's a raspberry.
That almost doesn't sound right. Like that, you say that the Team Skip protein blend.
Yes,
that you're drinking. Gotcha. Okay.
Yes, the Team. Yes. The Team Skip.
I'm like, what?
Protein blend.
I know what it is.
It's yes. But I'm using that right now. This is the, what is it, raspberry strudel? I preferred the strawberry sorbet personally better. But okay. I'm using raspberry right now. I'm gonna probably switch back after I'm done with this one. But yeah,
let me toss something in related to those goals and how important they can and can't be.
Sure.
And it's related. This is I was thinking to myself, what have I learned new in the last, you know, someone asked me, like, what have I learned new? And there's something that's come into my mind.
Yeah.
And it actually sort of developed from doing those podcasts we talked about a little bit. And it's connected with goals and setting up extrinsic rewards for yourself. And there's a book. You still there? Okay. All right, you look frozen for a second. By Daniel Pink, his last name is Pink, just like the singer, but that's actually his last name. And it's just called Drive. And it's a phenomenal, really kind of, he repeats the same message over and over again, but he looks into some of the pretty cool psychology. And I think I talked about this with Carl a little bit on the podcast, of intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. And the long and short of it is there's actually research with, like, rhesus monkeys, research with kids who tend to be artists, research with sort of in corporate settings with many, many studies actually with adults, where if you set up some sort of extrinsic reward, like a monetary reward for some sort of achievement in the workplace or whatever it might be, anything that's involved with your life, you rob it of the intrinsic value of the fun. So the best study that I think is just like, it's kind of sad, is they took kids, this is like in a preschool setting, the kids who naturally were artists, and they figured out who those kids were, and then they came to them and said, you know, your art is beautiful, you're wonderful, we're going to give you, if you draw another pretty picture, what have you, we're gonna give you a reward. We're going to give you, I can't remember what they gave them, but they set up some extrinsic value in having done that.
Yeah.
And it extinguished the artistry.
Really?
They stopped painting. They stopped doing those things.
Huh.
It stole the fun from it.
Wow.
So here I'm going to connect this. Okay. Like, I think this is really fucking important. That's why I brought it up. And I don't care if we don't get to questions on my board today, because this is kind of an important thing.
That's why I'm just sitting back and listening.
Yeah, this relates really, like, this is kind of like, this really hit me pretty heavy.
Okay.
Because this is a thing that I've dealt with in working with students over the years as a professor, when people come to me for sort of a mentorship or advice or what have you, all the time, is trying to find your passion in life. And so if you set something up with an external reward such that you do it, and then if you do well enough, you get X, Y, or Z, you will very often, if that particular activity involves any form of creativity or ingenuity or thoughtfulness, where you have to sort of like stretch yourself a little bit in order to achieve it, to learn to do something different, if you set up a reward, performance will go down. This happens like in the banking industry, where they're, you know, trying to like get stockbrokers to, make the most money. Like it's basically across fields. It's all covered in this book called Drive by Daniel Pink, at least a large amount of the literature. It's pretty fucking incredible just how widespread this really is. So I think what happens, and what has happened, and one of the reasons why it was necessary to kind of write this book, is that in the bodybuilding world, 20 years ago or even longer, when I was first doing this, there was no, you didn't get any extrinsic reward. Like, there was no, like, you know, I post a picture up and then I have 1,001 likes and people saying, oh my God, you look awesome, or what have you.
Yeah.
And people know this intuitively anyway. People will be like, the question you probably asked yourself, I know you have, because we talked about it, and is, if I pick something I'm passionate about and make it my life's work, will that I rob myself of the passion behind that endeavor?
Mm, yeah.
Will it not be as much fun anymore? And I think probably myself intuitively, I've never been like a money centered person. You know, I've got my dogs guarding the house, you know, and they got enough food and I can lift weights and eat and do simple things, and that keeps me happy, and I'm lucky and I'm simple in that way. But I think when people, and this is the nature of what social media has done to some degree, is it's created an extrinsic reward that's coupled to so many different things in our daily lives.
Yeah.
So many different activities that we partake in. Like anything, like, I don't know if you can see all this shit behind me. Like, I've been like, I made like a security box for my Jeep. It was friggin' awesome. It was so much fun to do.
Okay.
I took some wood and I have a slide to it, and now I got this box, and I'm making like a little solar generator system so that I can go, take the dogs to the park or whatever. I'm gonna have a little fridge that will run on solar in the back of my Jeep.
No kidding.
So if I want to go grocery shopping in the day, I don't have to skedaddle home to get things in, I'm gonna literally have a little fridge.
No kidding.
I'll send you the picture. Yeah, it was just fun as hell to do. Like, these like Jeep lock boxes are like, you know, they're hundreds and hundreds of $1,000s for the sliding thing. Like,
damn.
Overlanders is kind of the term that's used. People want to go out with their FJ Cruisers or their Jeeps or their trucks and do some overlanding where they've got a cooler and they can camp and that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And like, equipment can go, it's just sky high. So I just went and, you know, I bought some wood and bought some brackets, and I used like bed liner to paint the wood. Then I got some diamond plate rubber matting that make it look like it's diamond plate metal, but it's just rubberized, so the dogs can get up on top of the thing, and it's really fun to do. So something like that was just fun. And you want to share that with people, but with bodybuilding or something like that, whatever that might the creative endeavor someone might have, if you start getting rewarded for that, like social media rewards us in a way. And I don't know, I haven't gotten to the part in Pink's book where he's talking about social media as a reward, because that's sort of a social reward. It's not a monetary, fixed, extrinsic reward. But if we start doing things for that extrinsic reward, we can rob ourselves of the intrinsic value of those endeavors, like the fun of like trying to figure shit out.
Yeah.
So then it made me think, I'm like, holy shit, this explains why it's such an uncommon thing now, or becoming, it seems like at least a much lower percentage of bodybuilders and people that are in the fitness and physique world who really like, they want to figure out on themselves for themselves, because it's not intrinsically valuable to do that, because the reward they're getting is an external one. They want to get up on stage. They want to look awesome. Which there's nothing wrong with that. Everyone wants to look good. Right. They're social creatures, you know. But it's as if that intrinsic motivation has been extinguished by social media, because it's providing external rewards, which has that effect. So then the ingenuity and the curiosity and the creativity that would normally come behind, you know, oh, do I have to use diuretics for peak week? Or like, you know, how do I adjust my food? Like, what macronutrients should I adjust first? Does it matter? Should be fat or carbs? I'm confused. People are just like, oh, fuck, I'm just going to hire a coach. Because they've lost that. It's fun to figure that shit out. At least it is for me still, and I'm very happy about that. So I think I kind of connected, and maybe this is my own, the babbling of a raving, you know, maniac, but it seems to me like one of the things this explains this phenomenon where people just, I saw this on Professional Muscle actually, a thread about where have all the OGs gone, all the original gangsters. And they were, what someone was saying is that, you know, a question that you wouldn't have heard 10 years ago or a statement you would have heard was, let's just hire a coach.
Yeah.
Like that's like the... Why are you asking all these stupid questions? Hire a coach. That was like the tough love. You know, whereas 10 years ago it's like, well, get in the gym and figure it out. You know, or change your diet for 2 months and figure it out. Like that was the tough love. And now the tough love is just hire a coach. And it's still like this kind of like brash, like, you know, guys telling guys what to do, like buck up, trooper.
Right.
Get in there and figure this shit out. Just go hire a coach. What's wrong with you? Like, come on. But you can see those are just polar opposites in terms of actual approaches.
Yeah, absolutely.
One is completely digging in and feeling the reward of having figured it out on your own and sort of dancing the dance with your own physiology and nutritional changes and those sorts of things. And the other one is just give it to somebody else. So... connects back to Zen and the art of motorcycle maintenance and all those kinds of things. But anyway, so yeah, that was one thing I wanted to say, because it was connected with the goals and seeing value in disentangling those bits and pieces of why you do these things that you do. You know, is it because you just want to like look good on stage? You know, and then you're done, and then it's over. Like, if you don't have a coach, like, you don't know what to do anymore. You're lost.
Yeah,
I've seen that. I don't know if you've seen that before. There's a guy I worked for many, many years ago, who completely kept his clients in the dark. It's funny because he was like ahead of his time in a way. He was as bad as anybody I've ever seen.
Really,
in terms of doing, awful. He knew it was very like. It was dastardly, but it was a smart business plan where he didn't educate his clients at all. And this is when I lived in Texas, and he was a big guy, played for the Cowboys for a couple years. So he had like this air of authority given, you know, his status and how he looked.
Sure.
And you know, I don't even know how much he knew, because he never really talked about it. And you've seen people who do this, like they just say, this is how it is.
Yeah.
Just listen to me. And anyway, so that's all those things are interwoven in like this, in this interesting thing that I think social media and the internet and where we derive our motivation from is so important. I think it's so important to reflect back on, because that's like you can create your own carrot.
Yeah.
You create your own dangling carrot in a way.
It's weird. I was thinking about something last night that totally relates to this, and I didn't know where to take it. I made a note on my phone, and the note says, kids today with social media, what is this? Hold on a second. What has changed in the motivating factors to do bodybuilding? I was thinking back to like when I started, it was the end of the era that you came from. When I started competing, that is, all before that, for most of my life in the gym, it was that era. But when I started competing, there was only a few handful of years before it evolved into what it is today. But back then, you know, there was a few guys that competed, and that they were fewer and further between amongst very normal people that were at the gym. And you had your average gym rats, and they were guys like here in Detroit, at least, you know, the suburbs, we have a lot of factory workers, stuff like that. And so most of the people that were at like what we would call a hardcore gym, like I'll take Powerhouse Westland, shout out to Powerhouse Westland, now closed down, anybody who went there, most of the guys there were not competitors. They trained and they took gear and they got big and they ate and they did it because they loved to, and they loved to lift heavy weights.
And so was Shelby and you used to train every once in a while? Is that the Powerhouse?
No, that was Powerhouse Highland Park. That's the original one in Detroit.
This is
just like a suburban gym. Everybody worked in the factories and stuff. But the same thing could be said about any of those gyms, really. Highland Park was the same way. That's 15 miles down the road. And people did it because they loved doing it, and they loved the idea of lifting weights and challenging themselves and lifting, you know, they're challenging each other. You know what I mean? One guy's squatting 405. The next guy wants to put more on the plate, you know, that type of thing. They're bench pressing, you know, way more weight than they should. And a lot of these guys didn't have great form, and none of them were in really awesome shape. They weren't taking the amount of gear that people are today, but they did it for, I just was thinking about, you know, what bodybuilding was then versus what bodybuilding is today.
You need to come to the Powerhouse North here on North Florida, in Tampa.
Yeah.
That's how it is. Yeah.
It's still like that today?
Yeah. Guys just like, they're just in there just going bonkers. Like just, there's a crew of guys that I sometimes see in there. Like usually after I come in, I don't want to derail your story, but like something like five of them, and they just go off. They're talking shit the whole time and having a blast. It's just pushing the weight, man. And so they get a little sloppy with the form, but they're just having a good time. So I love it.
I feel like that's a dying crowd. That used to be, to me, what bodybuilding was. And nowadays there's so much, it's so different. You get into fitness, you meet people, and everybody complains about it on all the podcasts about how there's people that want to get into competing before they've even gotten their gym membership. They want to start taking gear before they even started training, before they knew what nutrition is. You know, the motivation, what do you think about the, can we talk a little bit about that? About what are the differences now in these motivations? Because I feel like it ties right in with what you're saying. You know what I mean? And at the end, these are motivations outside of yourself. This is not about getting any kind of personal satisfaction. This is about, like you said, it's about getting the likes. Extrinsic. Yeah, yeah. These extrinsic rewards.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, and I'm not a social psychologist, but I'm wondering if, like back in the day when you're talking about, there weren't coaches. The information wasn't there. So the people that you saw doing bodybuilding in the way that, you know, was kind of done in the old school fashion, to sort of, you know, just trying to figure it out on your own and talk to your buddies and tinker around and do things the way I have always kind of loved to do it. That's pretty much all you saw, because there was only people who were naturally oriented towards seeking out the intrinsic rewards of an endeavor would end up becoming a bodybuilder at that time. And now, fast forward 20 years or what have you, now we have coaches and we have all sorts of fitness systems promising you, you know, incredible transformations. We have social media perpetuating these things. You're constantly blasted with this idea that there is an extrinsic reward to be had with relative immediacy. Like you can get lean and big really fast if you just buy my 16-week system or whatever it may be. So that pulls people into the fitness world that wouldn't have ever been there otherwise.
Ah, I see.
That just don't have, they're just not as, at least when it comes to fitness and bodybuilding, they're not just, they don't have a proclivity to seek out intrinsic rewards related to that outcome.
They wouldn't have just found that gym on their own and discovered it otherwise, like what we're talking about.
It's not fun for them. I like to train.
Yeah.
Like some of those people, like they might find intrinsic reward in gardening or working on their car or painting or some form of art or some other hobby or art and craft.
Yeah.
So, and you'll see that too. You go in the gym and you'll see like clients, of trainers and, let's take someone who loves to cook and they're a wonderful chef and they spent decades learning about how to combine spices and oils. And they're just literally almost like world-class expertise level in the kitchen. And so there's incredible intrinsic reward connect with that behavior. And then you go to the gym, like they don't want, like none of that is interested in them at all. Just get me through the fucking workout. I want to get the weight off. I want to look better and just like make it happen.
Yeah.
So we have then, if you go into the bodybuilding world in competition, we have people that are maybe like I was, just sort of geared to seek out the intrinsic reward in the endeavor. And then at the other end of the spectrum, there's people who, because there is now an extrinsic reward that can be had, because you do have coaches, you do have programs, you do have all these things that at least promise you that immediate extrinsic reward, you'll bring people in who engage in the endeavor with an extrinsic reward, and maybe they never would have sought out the intrinsic reward, sort of the value in being their own coach and learning about what they're actually doing. And here's where my I'm glad you brought this up, because this gives me a chance to delineate this in a way that I've wanted to for a while. And there's the middle ground. There's some people who just, like, they would naturally be their own coach. Like, why the hell would I hire somebody? I can, so much more fun to figure this out on my own. That's kind of how I am.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of that way. And it has to do with my family of origin and my personality and blah, blah, blah. Various things probably combined to the recipe of who I am today to make me that way.
Sure.
And then there's some people that are kind of in between.
Hmm.
You know? And so they're bombarded with coaches and people saying, come to the extrinsic reward side.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we can give you quick fixes. We can get you there really rapidly. And, you know, don't worry about figuring it out. I've got it all figured out here for you.
Yeah.
And we'll give you, and you'll get those rewards. You'll make those changes in your body comp really, 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 really quickly.
And you won't even have to know why.
You don't have to know why.
Right.
And because we're going to provide you with the extrinsic reward and orient you towards extrinsic reward, it actually makes the knowing why and how and the underlying mechanisms that's involved less attractive. It's not even that interesting.
Because you don't need to know anymore.
That's the curious thing about this book, Drive by Daniel Pink, and this idea is that when you do provide those extrinsic rewards, it extinguishes the intrinsic motivation.
Hmm. Yeah.
Something about providing the extrinsic reward just sucks dry.
I'll tell you what that something is. The something is, it used to be that by learning those, I would tell myself, because, you know, I would tell myself, okay, if I can teach myself how to do these things, then I can achieve this goal. And so to me, the motivating factor to learn was to achieve the goal. And so now you know, that's the something. You don't need that anymore, yeah, is what you're saying.
He calls it the Tom Sawyer effect. I don't know if it's called this in the literature or not, but so there's a story from one of Mark Twain's books, Adventures of Tom Sawyer, where Tom was enlisted to paint like this giant white picket fence.
Yeah,
you may remember this story. Like
I do, I do.
Yeah, and so he's like, oh gosh, you know. So he tricks all the local boys into doing his work for him because he tells them how awesome, how much fun, and how intrinsically rewarding it is to paint the fence.
Yeah.
So they get all jazzed up to do it. Had they said, well, you know, Mrs. Smith or whoever it was who told him, like, you have to do this. You have, like, this is what you got to do if you want to have dinner tonight.
Yeah.
well, that's no fucking fun. But if he's like, look at the brush strokes, how you can just, how beautiful you can make each of them go around, and how the paint just, you know, flows in with the grain and the wood. And like, it's really so much fun to do this. Come here, give this a try, man. Try that. Wow. You are really good at that.
Yeah.
Do that again. That was incredible. Did you see what he just did? Come here. Could you do this? And the next thing you know, it's the funnest thing ever. It's like going to the amusement park painting the. So that's the Tom Sawyer effect.
Hmm. Yeah.
But if you have a coach that's wanting to keep you in the dark, they're saying, don't worry about that. Or maybe he doesn't even fucking know, you know, or he just wants to give you more drugs. Because that basically, you know, that'll cover up a lot of ignorance.
Sure.
Poor dietary and training habits. Unfortunately, it does. Then. Once you have that extrinsic reward put in place, that's the carrot dangled by those coaches or by social media with getting all the likes and all the, you know, the googly-eyed emojis and everything else when you post up a picture, now you've extinguished the fun of having figured out how to create those transformations in your own body.
Yeah.
You're not motivated to like figure that out anymore. All you want is the extrinsic reward.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing that those in between people who can be motivated both intrinsically and extrinsically, who could go to kind of the dark side of like, you know, wanting to just like buy every program and get the quick fixes and the magic bullets and those sorts of things, but also kind of like, I'm kind of interested in some of this sort of stuff. And that leads me back to the personal bodybuilding inventory is, and my whole book was just to give people an option. It's like, you know what? There's a tremendous intrinsic reward that can be had here.
Sure.
And let me show you how much fun it can be to paint this white fence on your own.
Right.
Yeah, the Tom Sawyer effect, so to speak. So it's like you're kind of confused. You're looking for new and things. Like someone has that strange, like they're asking about HMB or whatever it may be. And you're like, so what are we trying to do here? Where are we going? Like bring them back to the personal bodybuilding inventory. They can reassess what's going on inside of themselves and say, ah, this is why I'm really doing this.
Yeah.
This is my intrinsic reward system. This is what this is all about. Or maybe they can at least delineate. It's like, okay, I'm vain. I want to look good in a dress or in a dress shirt or whatever it may be. So that's part of it. But I also really like to figure out this stuff. I like to figure out, you know, how, whether I need to start doing high reps for these muscle groups or low reps for these muscle groups or whatever it may be, whatever the mystery they want to unravel when it comes to training, nutrition, supplementation, what have you.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a combination. So that the book is there to sort of let people know, like, there's some intrinsic reward you might be missing out on and no one's telling you about.
I'll tell you what, I think I might be a middle ground guy, or I don't know, because
a lot of people are somewhere.
Here's the way I feel is that by now I taught myself a lot. And then when I used a coach that, I learned a lot more. Now I didn't go to a guy who was just like, just shut up and listen. You know, I learned along.
They're out there, yeah.
And even if he didn't explain stuff to me, just going through the process, I learned from it. You know what I mean? Like I learned how far I could push my body. I learned how far, you know, and so somebody else and helped me to fast track some information that may have taken me a longer period. So I used a coach and I have, you know, I'll even use the last season I competed. It's been two seasons now. That was 2017. I hired Shelby to help me for I did three shows. He helped me for the last 3 weeks of the second the second contest. And
I remember this. Yeah.
He helped me by showing me how hard I could push in my nutrition. And once I had that, then I went on, I took the reins back, and it's like, now I learned something from him and I applied that to the following show after he and I worked together on my own. I definitely still have to thank him because he gave me the information, you know, to help teach me to get to where I got then. So it was still a learning tool. So I don't know if that makes me an on the fence guy or if that's something different.
We all learn from everyone. No one's figuring this shit out in a vacuum. Yeah. Like I didn't, you know, I went and I would just scour the boards and the internet and the scientific literature and piece together the information any way I can from whomever, you know, and I refer to Dante, he and I have had interactions, you know, and I was sort of, it was funny cause I was like onto the same number of thoughts that Dante was when I found DC training. Yeah. I've said before, I was doing 80% DC training already.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, I was sort of the same split and everything else. It was like, this is what was working for me. So we kind of had parallel learning paths, but you pick together, that's how you learn. You go to like gurus, you learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they say that Shelby was a trail guide for you. And I call the book, it's like a map.
Yeah.
You know, and it gives you some, like, here's the terrain, here's some possibilities. You're still gonna have to figure it out on your own, you know. And he said, "Okay, let's cut your calories harder than you thought you probably could to get away with."
Yeah,
and it worked.
Yeah.
So now you know that, you know, and you wouldn't have gone down like it if you tried this path. You're like, "That's a fucking scary ass path." He's like, "Let's give it a go. I'd be okay. I've been down there before."
Yeah,
you know. And so you did it. And that's a perfect way to learn. There's nothing wrong with that at all. We all have to learn from somebody, you know. I mean, sometimes you could just like. There are people who just like are off the wall, and they'll just like, they're complete innovators. Like you can, and this is like a business, but you can look like there's people that are innovate, people that are followers, and there's kind of various ways you can categorize people in terms of how novel innovations come into the business world or technology or what have you. And there are people that are just creating new and novel shit all the time.
Yeah.
You know, just coming up with stuff and thinking outside the box, so to speak. I actually said once recently, there is no box. That's the way to look at it. There's no box. What box are you talking about?
Yeah.
But so not everyone's like that. You have to learn from somebody. So you're paying attention to those people who are off the beaten trail. Like, so, oh yeah, look what that guy's doing. Holy shit. Look, he's got those are pretty cool little spikes he's got in his feet. They're letting him like run up the side of that mountain where I don't think anyone could run otherwise, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty cool. I think I can probably come up with something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I can use these things. So you innovate your own ideas based on what you saw him do. So Shelby told you about a different path you could take, and that's the perfect use of a coach. It's when people are like, and this is one of the rewards that's even a bigger piece than just the sort of the immediate intrinsic reward of having kind of figured things out is that then you become a little more brazen, and maybe if athletic endeavors or bodybuilding have a greater purpose, they're to carry over in a more global way the rest of our lives. So now you're like, you know what? I don't have to follow like the, you know, don't go below 10 calories per pound per day rule. I can do whatever. It's like, you know, I don't have to follow the rule of thumb for podcasting. I can do it this way.
Yeah.
I can do something that's even more off the beaten path. So you learn from the microcosm of bodybuilding, a certain amount of confidence in yourself and your own. You learn to be your own bodybuilding coach. You learn to be your own Buddha. You learn to be your own podcasting guru or what have you.
Yeah.
And you start doing it on your own. And that's what I hate to see is when people, they'll take on a coach as a set of training wheels that they never dump off.
Yeah.
So they just keep on like, so they're dieting down again and they're in that same situation. And it's like, okay, we know exactly what worked. We're going to have to cut your calories really friggin' low. And like, are you sure? It's like, yeah, it just worked. Like we did this before. Like, I don't see, then maybe it won't work. You never know, but it's everything else is lined up exactly like it had before, and they haven't built up a certain amount of confidence.
Yeah,
they haven't gained a little maturity or insight or wisdom or however you want to kind of couch it, in a way that makes them sort of behave, makes their life better, and makes their ability to explore all that life has to give us much more enjoyable.
Yeah,
just in general, like, fuck it, I'm going to go below 10 calories per pound. Fuck it, I'm going to do something new and different with my podcast that no one's ever done before.
Let's see what happens.
Whatever. Yeah, and see what happens. And that's the thing that I think about, because bodybuilding is such an extreme endeavor, and I think you can learn so much because it is an extreme confidence tester in so many ways, because it's your own body.
Mm-hmm.
And people can become, like, it can be right in your face, like, oh my gosh, I am totally paralyzed about whether I should drop carbs or fat. Holy shit. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? It's like you're about like to make a decision that's going to, you know, bring the world and the humanity to a screeching halt,
yeah,
you know, or you're going to save everyone, you know, and you'll be the, you know, the world's greatest savior. And when you can't step back from the crunch time of bodybuilding and get some perspective from those moments, then I think you've lost out on an important insight that this endeavor can get you. Yeah. As you can step back in so many ways, say, okay, this is all first world problems. You know, gosh, I really am insecure about my body. I do have esteem issues. Now they're right in my face. And these are impacting how I deal with my husband, how I deal with my wife, how I deal with my friends. So many different things. Like, there's so many lessons that can be extrapolated from the being in the pressure cooker of bodybuilding that only come from having to think for yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
Stretch yourself, step outside the box for a little while, get off the beaten path. That I think are just wonderful things for people to have, to sort of broaden their perspectives in life. And that's what I want for everyone, is to have a better life, you know. So that's why the book is there. It's like, yeah, step off the path. Maybe you'll get something that might make the rest of your life better too.
Yeah, I like that, so, man. I think that's it's a nice explanation, and it's very nicely said. A little while ago, while we were talking, Richard Martindale chimed in and he said, "Hey, Scott Stevenson."
Wink.
He says, "I was there with him freshman year doing cybergenics with our group. Leg day was always killer with Scott involved."
So that is Richard David Martindale, a fraternity brother of mine, one of my best friends from college.
You okay?
He's a lawyer. His, you remember the game show Tic Tac Doe?
Yes, yes. Well, I don't. I mean, I've seen it like repeats and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Well, the host for that was Wink Martindale.
Okay.
That's Rich's uncle.
Oh, no kidding.
So we used to call him when he played football in high school, and he gained a little, you know, the freshman 15.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of calling him Wink, we called him Twink, as in Twinkie. So we call him Twink sometimes.
That's funny.
Or Rich, yeah. He's from Tennessee.
Okay.
And I remember, like, I was there my freshman year, and he said this to me. I stepped into his dorm room, and I was kind of standing there in the threshold of the door.
The threshold?
I was in the threshold. And I'm halfway in and halfway out, and he's like, my nickname in college was Rowdy. He's like, "Watch out, Rowdy, I'm fixing to put the door to." And I'm like, "Hold on, what?" He's like, "Watch out, I'm fixing to put the door to." I'm like, "What's wrong with the door, and where are you putting it?"
Mm-hmm.
"Well, fixing to, like, I'm about to do that, and put the door to means close the door."
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'd never heard that before. So I remember that was one of the things, like, oh, okay, now I'm in the South.
Yeah,
fixing to put the door to.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rich said that to me.
That's so funny.
Anyway, that's hilarious since he chimed in. Yeah, cybergenics. Still the hardest program I've ever done.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think I've talked about that before, but that's a whole other topic.
I think so. And we're about out of time here. But this is a lot of fun, Scott. Guys, once again, iTunes is down at the moment. So we're going to have this show up as usual. It'll be up at YouTube. Of course,
iTunes is up. Advices Radio is down, right?
iTunes is down. No, because iTunes is connected to advicesradio.com. That's where all the shows are. So
iTunes is not down.
Our iTunes.
Can load iTunes.
Our iTunes. No, our our iTunes is down. Okay. You're messing with me today.
I know I am.
I'm doing my best here.
Right.
So you guys can go to YouTube. You can check out all the shows there. And if we can't get this thing back up and running, I'm just going to have to start up a new account. We'll start everything fresh. You know, worst case scenario. But hopefully we'll get advicesradio.com back up and running. Otherwise, you guys can still check out all the shows here. Go to the Advices Radio Facebook page. Go to the Advices Radio YouTube page. And Dr. Scott, as always, man, it's been a pleasure.
Was fun. No questions answered. Just pure banter.
A lot of questions answered for myself, though, inside of my own head. I'm ready to go train now. I'm going to go eat some food. I'm going to go get a workout in. How about you? What do you got going on? No golf.
No golf. I got lots of work to do.
All right.
It's going to be a fun week. Yeah.
Well, I will let you get to it. And I'll look forward to talking to you in another couple days for the Swole Trinity.
Yeah, here we go. Number four.
Five.
Right?
Five. Yes, sir. Yeah, number five.
All right. Go.
All right, guys.
See you guys 2 days later.
For another episode of Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott. I'm Scott McGalley. We'll see you soon.
Yo.
at Voices Radio Network.